Game On.
Game On.
2FM.
You're listening to the Game On podcast. You can join us nightly on 2FM, Monday to Friday from 7.
Game On. Rugby.
The first day of a two-day conference involving representatives of the Irish, Scottish, Welsh and English rugby unions took place at the Grand Hotel in Malahide today. It's discussing play participation and engagement with rugby in the 16 to 24-year-old age group, and in many ways it's aimed at discovering how player retention can be improved at ages where people are consigning their boots and their kit bags to retirement. All of this stems from a 2013 report that the Economic and Social Research Institute did in dropout rates across all sports in Ireland. The IRFU have delved into that issue a little bit more. It culminates in this gathering where all four unions are sharing their own experiences and their own research. We will hear from Dr. Pete Lunn, who's a behavioural economist with the ESRI, in just a moment. But first, the IRFU's Director of Rugby Development and Club Games, Scott Walker, on the motivation behind the conference.
Quite regularly, the four unions actually get together and discuss various topics, and this is an opportunity for 40 of individuals across the four unions of Scotland, Wales and England to come together and actually discuss a key topic. And the topic is a topic which affects all sports, which is a dropout occurs between the 16 to 19 age group. And so the next 2 days is an opportunity really for the four unions to share knowledge and information and also programs, because we're all in the same game, which is maximising participation in that age group.
And that's a key issue there, because ultimately the unions are defined by the success of the national teams or the success of the elite players, but this isn't necessarily about that. It's simply about participation in the sport, you know, public health, battles against obesity, participation in group events. That is as important as anything else.
It certainly is. I mean, at the end of the day, it's about young people having fun, participating in the social activity. But there is also larger effects of increasing our talent pool in regards to the number of participants. Also, if we have a large number of players that drop out at 16, it does affect our later talent identification programs as well. The reason for meeting over the next 2 days is really to increase the number of young kids who participate not only in rugby, but in all sports as well.
Pete, just to bring you in on it, you've done the research. How substantial or how significant is the fall off?
It's huge. Despite what you might hear regularly in the media, we're actually brilliant at getting young kids playing sport. By the time kids are aged around 11 or 12, the overwhelming majority, 90% of them, are playing regular sport in some kind of organised capacity. It really is remarkable when you think about what you hear on a regular basis in the media, how many kids are actually active. It's what happens after that that's the issue. And from the age of around 11, 12 onwards, there is a steady dropout in participation in sport and physical activity among school kids. And that's particularly severe at a few junctions. It tends to be greater when people move from one school to another school. It tends to be greater around exam periods, where people are going through busy periods in their lives. So a lot of it isn't actually about how much they enjoy the sport or their involvement. It's about fitting sport and exercise around their busy lives.
To look at the figures, it stands out straight away. It's in Ireland, from primary school to secondary school, there seems to be a drop off in that junction, and then likewise from secondary school into college and third level education. People might suggest that kids of that age need to focus on their education and focus on school, but is there research that proves that actually participation in sport can have an impact on a positive impact on grades?
Absolutely, we've modelled it. So I'm a nerdy economist who spends my time sitting in the corner of an office with a big computer running statistical models. And when you do that, what you discover is that the kids who participate more in sport get better grades. Now, that may not be a causal effect. It may not be that playing sport actually makes you get better grades, but it certainly suggests that the other effect is not there, that somehow by participating regularly in sport, what you're doing is damaging your chances of performing well in exams. Kids need to be active. Physical activity is very good for you. And consequently, you know, our view is, given that data, the suggestion that somehow it's a good thing for kids to drop out of sport and physical activity for the sake of their exams or their careers is misguided.
Overall, it's an issue that's across sport in Ireland. I know that it's obviously a subject of discussion amongst the rugby community today, but it's one that's shared amongst the GAA, amongst soccer, amongst the other main sports in the country.
We do actually find quite interesting differences between sports. The level of dropout from Gaelic games is higher than it is from soccer and rugby, almost twice the size actually. So there are issues there, but dropout from sport is an important thing for all sports. I mean, rugby's particular issues are actually around the two school junctions. So it really is when kids go from primary to second level, or when kids leave second level education, that's when the major dropout from rugby occurs, and that's the areas that you know, people need to concentrate on. I'm delighted the IRFU is engaging with this research and taking it seriously and looking at it, because that's what we would hope all sporting organisations are willing to do.
Scott, how much discussion have you had with either young adults themselves or their parents or the people involved in sport at that level to try and find out maybe socially what the impact is and what the thought process behind the dropout is?
The IFU engages quite regularly with its clubs and its stakeholders, and each year we tend to meet with close to 50 clubs in which we discuss this, and year on year we have identified that there is an issue here, and especially in transition year when we talk with the schools, in that, you know, we have noted the last couple of years that there is dropout occurring in that break year, especially in our exempted schools. And we have tried to put programs in. I think what's interesting about the work of the ESRI is it's providing almost statistical evidence to back up what we see as a perception in our data, but it's also given us insight. And I think Irish Rugby is very good at looking outside of its own boundaries, at good practice overseas, looking at good practice in other sports, to actually learn about how we can do things better. And I think what's come out of this is quite often we indirectly put in place barriers which prevent kids from transiting into other areas of the game. And what the ESRI has allowed us to do is actually look at those barriers and say, how can we get over them? And it's actually the transition between schools into a new part of their life in which they're dropping out. So if we can make that transition easier, make the game more convenient for them, then obviously going to increase the numbers.
And there's a sense as well almost that once you've lost them, you've lost them forever. It's very difficult to get them back if they've been out of sport for a year or two.
It is, and some of the initiatives we're trying, and we've tried an initiative down in Limerick which has been very successful, in which we've got 400 people back into playing the game, and that's by creating a very social form of the game away from the club, getting them back linked into playing an invasive game, and then bring them down to the club in which they're now playing 15-a-side again. So it's not necessarily you've lost them, they're just disengaged, and how do we get them to engage back into the game again?
It's interesting. I'm thinking of rugby when you're growing up and you're almost born into a club, and then you're born into a school or you're selected for a school, and the importance of the club and the school in rugby. It surprises me then that this level of drop-off exists, because it's almost an inherent part of your DNA from early life. Is there a bit of a contradiction between the rugby culture and what the stats show?
I suppose professionalism also brings in this form of early elitism, which in some ways deters a number of kids from continuing to be social participants in the game. And that's the areas we're really targeting, is the house teams and schools. Those young players who go through school playing social rugby, who actually become our future club volunteers. And they're the group which we're really targeting, and the next 2 days is actually discussing that group. You know, the elite players who move on to professional contracts will continue to play the game, but it's that whole population of players underneath who need to continue playing the game into the club, and then they become our volunteers who pass the game on to other young people.
Pete, do we know exactly where they're going? Are they going off to do other aspects of life, or get, you know, enjoyment and social interaction elsewhere, or is it just simply a case that sport is no longer the great love?
I think actually it's got remarkably little to do with their attitudes towards sport. I mean, we live in a culture where we think people make decisions themselves and they know what they want, but actually quite often what happens is changes in people's lives result in them dropping out of something when they haven't actually made any active decision to do so. So you imagine someone moves from primary to second level school, and all of a sudden, you know, they've got more homework, they're doing longer hours, their travel arrangements have changed, possibly their own childcare arrangements have changed, and it just becomes awkward to fit something in that was previously habit and was convenient, and they drop out. Maybe for a while they think, oh, well, I'll take that up again when I can get it organized, and then they don't, and so on. So people often end up dropping out for no reason that's actually to do with their real attachment with the game. They're just dropping out because aspects of their lives are changing. And I think that's particularly true of young adults who go to college, might leave college. You're then going into the labour market for the first time. That's a big step, as we all know, for everybody. And often things get dropped by the wayside. And again, the intention might be to pick them up again, but that might not happen. And we can see that in the data. You know, we see that people, when they hit those junctions in their lives, there's quite a probability that they drop out afterwards, and that has a lasting effect, that they then quite often don't get back into any kind of sport and physical activity. Now, from our point of view, if we can keep that engagement, if we can make it more convenient for people to keep active when they go through those transitions in their lives, then we can prevent some of that dropout, and we can get more adults active, which is good for the health.
That's Pete Lunn of the ESRI and Scott Walker of the IRFU in advance of that. Big reaction to this. If you've got thoughts on what it is that's encouraging, forcing, perhaps inducing kids to give up sport at that age, or your own experiences, 51552 from Northern Ireland 80889. You can tweet at Game On 2FM. George has been in touch. Being overtrained and coaches would win at all costs are big factors. Enjoyment must be a priority. Less emphasis on fitness and more on skills is vital also. Talk of strength and conditioning for 16-year-olds is crazy. Another texter: I have two girls that love sport, but girls are not looked after as well as boys. 51552 for thoughts on that. David from Mallow as well. I gave up rugby when I was 21 as a result of injury, but I took up refereeing with the Munster Association of Referees. One of the best decisions I made within the sport. 51552 from Northern Ireland 80889. You can tweet at GameOn2FM on the issue of participation dropout. Donal Lenihan is with us. Donal, how you doing?
Good day, man. How are you?
Not too bad. We'll talk about the Rabo semi-finals in a moment, but I know you've been listening into that. I suppose, first and foremost, from a societal point of view, any association being proactive and trying to get people involved in sport and stay with sport is to be encouraged. But from a rugby perspective, a very proactive approach from the IRFU to try and retain its participation levels.
Yeah, I think it's great to see, and great to see all sports sharing information on issues such as this, because it is a major problem in rugby. The fallout, as your speakers were saying, is huge. There's a number of reasons for this, in my view, but even, you look at club level across the All-Ireland League, the teams are getting younger and younger. There seems to be very few guys over 27, 28 playing the game anymore. I share the views of some of your texters there. I think a lot of the rugby played in schools level now, there's so much preparation going into it. They're almost on a par with professional rugby players. So a lot of the kids, I think, when they leave school, they've just had enough of it. The enjoyment level for me is the key factor. And I think when you compare, let's say, participation in something like tag rugby, I've seen a lot of it in our own club here in Cork. And the numbers there are phenomenal. Right through the summer, Tuesday and Thursday nights, huge numbers. And that's all to do with enjoyment. Whereas, the professionalism of rugby seems to have lifted the overall intensity of all teams. And, I think that is putting players off. So, the idea, you play sport for enjoyment, for recreation and for fitness. And I think that has to be looked at. So it's great to see the RFU actively looking for ways and means of keeping players in the game.
And it's interesting to listen to Pete Lunn within that chat. It's an issue that the FAI and the GAA have. So it's across all sports, and it's those junctions from primary school to secondary school and from college to the professional world and everything else. But one issue around rugby, and I'm not sure if you've seen the clip, is safety and particularly concussion. Did you see the Florian Fritz incident from over the weekend?
Yeah, I mean, that to me was unbelievable. Hugh Cal, our commentator in RTE, he had it before we did the Munster-Ulster game last Saturday. I hadn't seen it live, but, when I saw the replay of it, I mean, it was unbelievable how he could have been put back on. I mean, he got a clear knee into the head. Not only was he spurting blood, but there was no question he didn't know where he was. But this is just happening all too regularly. I mean, in the last 12 months, I was in Sydney for the third test in the Lions when George Smith got a bang after 10 minutes. He went right under the tunnel, under where we were doing our radio commentary on the evening. And there was no way you said this guy was going to be back. Yet he was back on the field within 10 minutes. You go to the Ireland-Italy game in the Aviva this year. Paul Derbyshire went off, took a bang on the head. Yet he was back. And it was clear to me, looking at him on the field, the positions that he was taking up, he had no idea what he was doing. Mm. So, I mean, I just can't fathom, because even why would you put the players back on because they can't function properly? Surely if you've reserve on the bench, he's going to do a better job than a player who is clearly doesn't know where he is. But the Fritz thing brought it to a new level, and I just thought it was appalling.
And you would wonder if the LNR, who run the league in France, have any kind of a backbone, would they take action against Toulouse or against Guy Noves? But we'll wait and see how that plays out for another day. And then on the flip side, and again to pay tribute to the IRFU, we saw the situation with Brian O'Driscoll against the All Blacks, wasn't it, where arguably it could have been the most iconic game of the man's career, but yet Aina Falvey, the doctor, stepped in and said, Brian, there's an issue here, you're not fit to play, let's go.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. When the right thing was done that day. You see, a player will always want to play. But the worrying thing is when you see a coach actually overruling the medical team, which seemed to be the case in Toulouse last week. But the medics have to be given the authority to make decision regardless of anyone in the management team. And, that is something I think the IRB should take some action after the issue in that Toulouse game. An example has to be made somewhere.
Yeah. Anyway, we deviated from the reason we had you on to chat, and that was about the Rabo Direct Pro 12 semi-finals this weekend. Glasgow against Munster on Friday in Scotstoun, 7:35 start. That's live on this programme. And then on Saturday, Leinster against Ulster at the RDS, 7 o'clock. And there is a special programme over on Saturday Sport on Radio 1 as a result of that and the Championship getting underway. So anyway, to start maybe chronologically, Glasgow-Munster Friday. Glasgow will look at the tape of Munster against a massively weakened Ulster team at the weekend, and they will be in raptures of excitement at the prospect of facing a team that were so far off the pace as Munster were.
Well, I think they're wasting their time looking at the tape, because if Munster play anywhere near like that, they're going to repeat what they did against Zebre, 54-0. I mean, Munster were so bad on the night. It was embarrassing. I've seen Conor Murray on the 6-1 news tonight call it embarrassing. Very difficult. If your head is in the wrong place going into a game, which Munster's obviously was, very difficult to arrest that in the middle of the game. You know, I mean, they didn't adapt to the conditions. The basic skill levels were poor. And you could see a young Ulster side who obviously, you know, were a lot of those players had never even been in Thomond Park before. They were very much up for the game. But you could they could sense as the game was going on that they had a chance of winning this game. They got better. They competed brilliantly at the breakdown, where Munster always do so well. And if Munster don't address those issues on Friday night, then it could be embarrassing for them, because Glasgow are the form team in the league. They've won 8 in a row. They've actually won more games than Leinster, who topped the league in the regular campaign. So they've been coming for a long time. And I mean, you look at even the conditions on Friday night on Saturday night in Scotstoun, an appalling night there as well, a very heavy pitch, and yet they managed to score 8 tries. So, you know, Munster seem to, not for the first time this year, like the variance in their performances are so wide, it's crazy, really. But look, I think they'll have to address those issues, and I've no doubt they will during the week.
But yet, to talk about it, the Rabo Awards took place on Sunday evening in Edinburgh, and Johnny Gray made the opportunity to remark upon the fact that in the previous encounters this season, the away team has won, and you would wonder then, this supposed massive advantage that you have at being at home, is it completely counteracted in a fixture like that, when traditionally the away side has proven themselves to be able to go and do a job?
Yeah, well, I think, look, Munster have won in Scotstoun already this year. Glasgow are only playing there, I think. This is only their second season there. So it is a kind of a wide-open pitch. So, but that said, I don't think it matters, really, where the venue is. Munster, they have a six-day turnaround. It's the actual travel and all that impose challenges. But that said, look, I mean, all the teams in the top four, they know each other so well. They know what to expect. I don't think home or away is a massive advantage one way or the other. Even Ulster going down to the RDS, they've played there so many times. It's a question of getting your head right on the night. And I think that's the biggest challenge for Munster, because Glasgow now have a strength and depth. We've seen all their matches recently. Nearly their bench has been full of internationals. They play an attractive brand of rugby. And in a sort of a perverse way, which is probably strange to say, given there's 3 Irish provinces in the semi-finals. But it wouldn't be a bad thing for the Rabo, for a Scottish team, to win the trophy for the first time. Like, you know, to do something. Scotland have never won any trophy in the professional era. So, you know, it wouldn't be a bad thing, even though I'm sure Munster won't be looking at it that way on Friday night.
Briefly, to get your view on Leinster against Ulster. From a Leinster perspective, there's all this baggage of bidding farewell to a number of players. You know, that exists on both sides when you look at Johan Muller, who's done so much for Ulster in recent years. That sense of familiarity. There's high expectation of there being a quality game at the RDS. And to talk to one or two of the Ulster people behind the scenes at Thomond Park on Saturday, there's a sense that they almost owe Leinster one at this stage.
Well, there's no question of that. I think in the last 13 competitive games, Leinster have won 11 of them. Ulster, in effect, they topped the league last year. They were entitled to host the Rabo final. But because Ravenhill was being redeveloped, they had to accede that to Leinster. So, you know, they lost the Rabo final in the RDS last year. But I think, to be fair to them, their chances revolve around, you know, the likes of Rory Best, John Afoa, Ruan Pienaar. They have to get those back into the side. I think if they do, they'll really put it up to Leinster, because Leinster really haven't played with the consistency that they've shown over the years, apart from that fantastic attacking performance against Northampton away in the Heineken Cup. You just haven't seen... certainly from a creative point of view, you haven't seen the Leinster team that we've become accustomed to over the last few years. And you can't just press a button when you come to the second last game of the year and produce it. No, there have been distractions. I think there were. It was a good decision last week to get the whole furore around Leo Cullen and Brian O'Driscoll to deal with that. I think, you know, both for Munster and Leinster, to like the silly season in many ways. Last week, Leinster had an award ceremony, their end of year. Munster had it on the Thursday before the Ulster match, and also the Europa Awards were on the Wednesday. So there's no question that, you know, their heads didn't seem to be focused on the games they were playing last weekend, but I would expect certainly Leinster to be vastly improved from what we saw against Edinburgh. And they'll need to be because, you know, I think both away sides, Glasgow and Ulster are capable of creating shocks. Like Munster and Leinster have been probably the most consistent sides in the league, but they'll have to perform if they want to make the final.
It's mouthwatering, certainly Friday and Saturday evening. Donald, good to talk to you. Thanks as always.
Cheers, Damien.
Donald Lenihan joining us there. A lot of texts in on this IRFU participation study and the issue of dropouts across sport. Children who play Gaelic games, swimming, rugby, and all that is more mainstream sport are catered for well in general. Those who play individual sport run into huge expenses to get coaching and to compete. That's from a Galway listener. The benefits of strength and conditioning for young sports people depending on their stage of physiological development is well documented by the American Council on Sports Medicine. It's annoying to hear unfounded criticism of S&C in these debates. Gaelic games is an amateur sport with no opportunity for career or financial rewards. The most talented young athletes turn to other sports as they mature to try and make it at higher grades. That's from John Doran. Point we're taking on board, but again, to listen to Pete Lunn, it's an issue that it's a drop off in all sports, not necessarily Gaelic games at the benefit of the other sports. Here's one from one extreme to another. Booze, girls, work away from home, first time immigration, etc. As anyone in the Gaelic, in the GAA will tell you, it's the under 21s who tell you the future, not the minors. In rugby, it's the under 20s. County Kerry listener to 51552. My son is excellent at sports. He may not be an A student at other academic subjects, but will never be recognised by the Department of Education for his sporting ability. He's in junior cert and will be an A student at sport. I think there should be points for other sports subjects. That's a point that's been long made by many people. Been left on the sideline, yet attending all training sessions. It's win at all costs. That's even at under 12, which we have spoken to our good friend, the Coach Diary, whose name escapes me, Antonio Montero, one of the most sensible people when it comes to underage coaching and approach to sport that you will find on that whole issue. Right, one other text for now to 51552 from Northern Ireland, 80889, or at Game On 2FM. Burnout from overtraining by coaches, more interest in their own glory than the young players, is turning players off sport. Must be faced up to. Donald Lennon is correct. Put the enjoyment back into youth sport.
Game over.